This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Collector's Compass, the official podcast of Collector's MD, where we explore the intersection of collecting, mental wellness, and responsible engagement in the hobby. I'm your host, Alex Efron, founder of Collector's MD, and today I'm joined by Taylor Santiago, owner of Santiago Sports in Matawan, New Jersey, which happens to be my local card shop since I moved to Old Bridge, New Jersey earlier this year, and also a shop I've been a customer of for many years. This episode is a special one. It's all about perspective. What does it mean to be a brick and mortar card shop owner while navigating a fast-paced, break-driven industry? And how do you stay credible, build community, and balance tradition with modern platforms? Tyler's done all of that and more through his shop, through his content, and his presence across the hobby. So let's get into it. Tyler, what's going on, man?
What's going on? Happy to be here.
Appreciate you you joining. We have known each other for some time, and you know, obviously you know that I launched Collectors MD earlier this year. We're doing a lot of really great things, so it's just an awesome thing to be able to collaborate with some of the names, the voices in the hobby that you've known, that you've built sort of credibility and rapport with. And so I'm really grateful to have you here, and yeah man, let's dive in. So the first segment that we're going to discuss is the origins and building of Santiago Sports, which obviously is your baby. So, Tyler, your story in the hobby starts at an early age. You mentioned on the About page on your website that you started collecting at the age of 3. You were going to shows with your dad and your twin brother, Casey, who also manages the shop with you. That tradition turned into Santiago Sports, a shop that's expanded into not just cards, but also vintage clothing and wrestling merch. I've been to the new location in Matawan, and I have to say it is absolutely a beautiful space. You guys did an incredible job. So congratulations on the move. I know you guys just moved into the new space earlier this year. It looks amazing. You guys have a really great sort of production quality with all of your content, all of your live streams, and that's really awesome. So sort of going into your early days of collecting, what are some of your earliest memories of the hobby with your dad and Casey?
First off, thanks for the kind words. And I mean, earliest memories of the hobby are pretty much just like you said, we would go to card shows with our dad when we were younger, even as babies. He would push us around in a stroller when it was his turn to watch us, I guess. And we would just be at the shows. I can remember as far back as like being around like 3 years old and him taking us, and we're just in a stroller chilling while he's looking at stuff. And he would hand us a pack of like Batman cards. I don't think Topps did not make them. I forget what company did, but there's like a 95 or 96 Batman product that had a piece of gum on it, and it was like a tattoo on it as well from like a scene from Batman, the cartoon. So that those are like my first memories. And one of the other, my other memories, cause I still have it, is a oversized, it wasn't Donruss Studio, but it was like Donruss 8x10 Barry Sanders card. It's like a headshot portrait. And I still have that. And I actually put it in, again, this is like close to 20 years ago that I put it in there, but it's in like a plaque, and I put it in there. And I know it's the first one because it was like beat up from me being a kid, like playing with it. So I still have that. Those are some of my first memories.
Awesome. So at what point did you realize you wanted to go from being a collector to a shop owner?
I've known from a young age. I mean, there's, when I look back at like some of my old like journals or notebooks from like, you know, elementary school, it'd be like, what do you want to do when you get older? Be like, I want to open a card shop. And then I'd draw like a picture of a building that said card shop on it. So that's always been the dream.
Love it. Tell us the story of launching Santiago Sports and sort of how you've grown it into more than just a card shop. Obviously, you guys have been around for some time. You've had a presence in the hobby, but you're really, really, I think, bursting onto the scene, you know, from a brand standpoint. How has that growth and evolution been?
I mean, I think it starts from just building it up from social media. So if you look at our page or like our about on the Santiago Sports Instagram page, it'll say we started the page in 2013. I thought we started it. It must have been like literally, it says January 2013. I thought we started on New Year's Eve. So that's why I say 2012, because I remember me and my brother talking about it when social media, when Instagram was starting to get big. So 2012 would have been my freshman year of high school. So I just remember online, like people, I would find people just posting like pictures of cards, and like there was a community on there, nothing like it is today, but the community on there was pretty cool. And there are still some, I call them OGs. I'm one of the, to me, one of the OGs of Instagram, looking back. And it's, that's where it started of like, all right, like people are posting this stuff, like other people think this shit is cool, not just like in the area. So it grew from that, having that page and like consistently posting and going to card show. So it grew from just having a page from a long time and being in the hobby and in the community, and then getting older, just being consistent. That's, people ask me all the time, like, how do I grow a page? It's, that stuff's just not, very rarely does it happen overnight. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, because very rare it does. I've seen people literally overnight pull a big card and bam, 5,000-10,000 followers from pulling that card in Fanatics or someone reposting it. Right. But just staying consistent, posting content, whether you get 5 likes or 100 likes, the algorithm is very brutal. Like I post stuff that can get 1,000 likes. I post stuff that gets 80, 100, 150 likes. And it's like frustrating, because it's not, Instagram isn't what it used to be, but the consistency still helps, and someone will see it. You don't know who, someone's going to see it and remember that.
Yeah, I can relate to that now that I'm, you know, creating a lot of content through Collectors MD. There are some lulls for sure. I mean, we're just starting out. So, you know, a post could get 5 to 10 likes, a post could get upwards of 100, sometimes more. And it's just kind of a crapshoot. You have no idea what's going to sort of engage your audience and do well. And so, you know, you just have to stay consistent. I couldn't agree more with that. And I also think it's interesting that you bring up the fact that you're sort of an OG in the hobby as far as Instagram goes, especially because you and Casey are so young, you know, compared to some of the other shop owners and, you know, names and voices in the hobby. We do have a handful of young entrepreneurial individuals who have really established themselves, but I think you guys are definitely you know, in that group, or at least leaders in that group. And I think, you know, you're both wise beyond your years. You've really established yourself as a strong presence in this space. And it is an extremely competitive industry. So in order to differentiate yourself, stand out, really create a unique product and offering for your customers, I think is something that's sort of underrated in this space. It's definitely not cookie cutter. You have to attract to a very specific audience, especially depending on where you are geographically. Obviously, being in Jersey, there's a lot of other card shops. I know Monmouth is not too far from you guys. There's a few others, but you guys have really, again, established yourselves as a very credible source for all things, not just sports cards, but sports or merchandise, I should say. So you mentioned, or you graduated from Rutgers, right?
Yeah. What's up? Yeah.
See, that was actually a perfect example of how, you know, the grind never stops. I mean, Tyler is literally running a card shop as we speak, so he's got employees coming in, asking questions, all sorts of stuff. So I respect the hustle.
Yeah, so I feel like there definitely is competition in the area. I don't think I have to compete with other people. Like, I do what I do. I'm not going to say nobody else can do what I do, but it's hard for people to do what I do because I know exactly what goes into it. And we don't tie ourselves to one thing. I mean, there's multiple aspects of the shop. So I know we're talking mostly about the shop, but we do IG live breaks. We're live 7 days a week about, I don't know, I would say 10 to 12 hours a day, just about. Outside Sunday is like our slower day with football back, of course. But here are my aspects of the store. One is a shop, two are breaks, three card shows, four grading, and then five, I can say I bunch a couple of things into this. Story sale, live sale, and then eBay and like those other like minuscule things or platforms that go into that. Also, you could throw events in there too, because you know we have event. I used to do them once a month. I think we're gonna get back to that now that you know school started and fall's here. I think events in the summer are a little harder to do, but we do a little bit of everything. And one thing that I want to say in general here is, you touched on like competition and there being a lot of stores in the area. I am not here to. I know I'm not going to make everyone happy. Like, there is just no way I'm going to have 100% customer satisfaction rate. Like you said, cookie cutter before. I am not cookie cutter. I'm honest. I try to be as upfront and truthful that I can with my customers and people or potential customers. And I realize that that's not something you're going to get at any other card shop. And I want to be able to give that to people. But I also know that probably does drive some people away because I am who I am, and I'm not going to try and please everyone when I know it's hard to please everyone. So right. I'll continue to take care of my community, my people, and the people that continue to support me, because that's really all you can do at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I totally hear that. And I respect that. I respect, you know, the authenticity. I think being yourself, especially in the space, is so incredibly important. Trying to mirror somebody else's style or approach, I don't think is really going to get you anywhere in this, not just this industry, but in life. You really just got to stick to your guns and focus on who you are as a person. I think you do a really good job of that. So you went to Rutgers, you studied communications and entrepreneurship, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So did that at all like help shape your approach to, you know, owning a business, branding, you know, basically building a brand from the ground up?
Definitely. So that's one thing I didn't even talk about. One of the other aspects of what I do is content. So whether it's the long form content we put out on YouTube or the short form stuff that also goes out on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook, that's another aspect. And that's where communication comes in place. I think people who aren't familiar with what communication is, it's not just talking to people. It's more so like media. To me, it's more of a media degree in how to edit videos, how to act on camera, how to write scripts, how to write a story. There's so many different things you could do in the world of communication when you go to school. But I did it, one, because I liked doing it, and I enjoyed sports. And I think writing about, I was a great writer. I had my editor, or my professor was the editor of patch.com. So if anyone here is from New Jersey, go on Google and type in what's happening around me or what's the weather. You're going to see patch.com. You're going to see Tom Davis, the editor. I think he's still there, but he even tried to hire me. And I was like, nah, no, not for me. It's fun, but not for me. So that stuff, it helps shape a lot of what we do today. So I think a lot of that that communications degree has ended up in my content. One, because I know exactly what I'm looking for and what goes into editing videos. I hated editing. That's why I pay people to do it, because I hated it and it drove me nuts. Yeah. As far as like on camera stuff, I understand how a lot of that works and what shots we need to get or what people want to see. And as far as entrepreneurship, so entrepreneurship at Rutgers is like kind of a loophole of getting into the business school, because Rutgers Business School is number one in the Northeast. It's an insane school, hard to get into. So I did entrepreneurship there, and I was in the business school taking the same classes that business majors were taking in some aspects as to what they needed for their degree. That helped me because I met some really cool professors and took some really cool classes that helped me realize the business side of that. So they kind of went hand in hand, my major and my minor, for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, you don't hear it often that people take what they learn in school and apply it to their everyday life, especially in the world of sports and sports cards specifically. But that's great that you've been able to take some of what you learned and apply it to your day-to-day. And you mentioned you're a great writer. We publish daily content with Collectors MD. We have a series called The Daily Reflection. Maybe in the future, I may ask you to contribute to that. Because I'd really love for you to share your perspective on some of these things. So we'll transition over to the next.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Segment, which is the role of the LCS in today's hobby. And so in 2025, the industry is dominated by 24/7 streams, massive breakers, corporate platforms. But Santiago Sports has sort of leaned in a slightly different direction, right? You guys have really prioritized things like your Monday night Instagram singles. You know, you mentioned Instagram Live being live and selling personals and running sort of smaller breaks the way they used to run back in like the early days of the pandemic when I personally got back into the hobby. I appreciate that. And building a strong sort of in-store culture. Right. You're not force feeding products. And I think customers really respect that. Whereas, like, you know, I think a lot of these card shops and even some of the smaller ones have made the move over to Fanatics Live and whatnot. And they're on there 24/7. And that has become the focal point of their business. Right. And it's, you know, for some, they could find a lot of success in that. But I think there's also a lot of sort of predatory things that come with that environment that we talk about quite a bit at Collectors MD. And so, again, I really respect that you stuck to your roots and you continue just doing what works. So what does it take to keep a local shop thriving in today's landscape?
I feel like competitive hours for sure. You need to be open 7 days a week. I feel like we used to be open six when we first opened at our first location. But again, that was because it was literally just me at that point until like I didn't hire anyone until a month in. But I realized about close to 3 years ago in the summer, I'm like, man, people, whether we're open 5 hours or not open at all, I'm probably better off opening in the summer when kids are off from school. Parents are able to take them places, hopefully. And I moved into that philosophy. And I think we have an advantage over some stores because depending on the area or like religion, I honestly plays a factor into it. I know some Jewish owners of stores who don't open on Saturdays because of their Sabbath or whatever. So right. To me, you know, I'm not Jewish. So I'm fully open to being open on a Saturday. I feel like that's an advantage in the hobby. And I'm open Monday, and a lot of other stores in the area aren't open Monday. So I look at that, I'm like, why would I not want to be open and be an option for people? So that hours to me is one of the most important things. Next most important thing, I feel like a lot of shops have a lackluster selection of singles. I'm not going to say ours are the best in the world, but I think we do have a solid selection, especially because we have a wide selection. Like,
yeah,
we just add, so we have 10, 11 showcases, 11, there's 10 in a row, then one, and then there's three other showcases. So we have 14, I would call them jewelry showcases currently in the shop. And those are three tiered, and those are, they go from like higher end stuff to like the mid end stuff and then lower end on the bottom. So we're actually adding three more to the shop that are the vertical double side. You can fit 120 cards on each side. So we're going to be able to throw in another almost 700 plus cards on these cases once they're in. So singles are important to have people coming back, and you got to be able to put new stuff out. We're direct with Topps and Fanatics and Leaf. So we get all the new product. I'd say we get 98% of all the new products. So that definitely helps. And we have a great relationship with those companies. I don't feel like a lot of shops in the area do. And that's, I don't think it's really up to them, but I worked for it and I put myself in a position to feel that way and have those relationships. So there you go.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, and as I mentioned before, I've been a customer of yours for some time. I've been in the new space and it really is beautiful. And, you know, you mentioned the singles. You guys always do have such a great selection. I've obviously purchased from you guys in the past. And you guys are fair. You know, sometimes we'll go back and forth on negotiating prices and you'll be like, yeah, I'm firm on this, that, and the other. But you guys have thrown me personally some great deals before, which I'm always appreciative of.
I feel like another big thing about us is that we pretty much buy like everything that comes in. I wouldn't say everything, but when I say everything, I mean like reasonable cards, like stuff that we can actually use. I say we buy probably 85-90% of what comes in, and I think we pay stronger than any shop in the area. I mean, you go to a gold and silver shop, you're not getting top market for gold or silver. Same thing at a card shop. I know other shops in the area that are very picky and only want the best of the best. And I've heard it's not just one or two people. It's close to 100 people I've heard before over the years that some shops don't want to pay over 50%, 60% of comps when we're consistently paying 70 to 80, usually more 75, 80. And on the super liquid stuff, I've paid 85, 90%, 95%. Like, it really depends what you bring us, but that is another aspect that's very important to what we do.
Yeah. And you know, I have your site up here. You guys obviously have an incredible amount of inventory. I mean, we're talking about like 40 plus pages of just vintage clothing. Where do you guys get these pieces from? I mean, you have a lot of stuff. I mean, this is like an Eli Manning jersey with a Reebok logo. So this jersey is like 20 plus years old. Like, it's just the stuff you pick up at like thrift shops, or like, do people bring the stuff in?
Yeah, I don't have the time for thrifting anymore. I didn't honestly never really did it that much. I did it a good amount before I opened the shops. Once I opened, it's time out the door. Some of this stuff is from before when I before I opened the shop and was able to thrift. But a lot of it, I bought a collection of vintage stuff, again, right before I opened 2019, 2020, from an older gentleman that just traveled and bought a bunch of T-shirts and jerseys. A lot of people do come in and sell us stuff. Same thing with the wrestling. We buy a lot of figures, a lot of T-shirts and vintage jerseys. Definitely do not pay a strong on that kind of stuff because that's not like our main focus at the shop. But I do buy it if it makes sense. And that's a better outlet for us to sell things online when it comes to the merch and stuff. But it is a cool to have in the shop.
Awesome, man. And just plug your Instagram real quick. You guys are always buying. You're constantly just promoting your weekly singles, and you guys are always busy. It just seems like it's absolutely insane. I can't imagine how you navigate all of this. And so, getting to my next question, how do you balance a lot of that? Like, in addition to the walk-ins, and you mentioned the events, not just the events. I know you attend a lot of card shows as well, almost what feels like on a weekly basis, and you're vlogging those shows and Of course, you host your Instagram sales on a weekly basis. So how do you find time every day to fit all of that in while also still, you know, looking out for yourself?
Well, I feel like you own a card shop or a business that kind of becomes your life unless you're already like ungodly rich. I was never rich. I'm not rich. But like, I know card shop owners that were a lot older than me who got into it because they saw an opportunity, have a lot of money. They just pay people to do it. I'm really hands-on in terms of like what we do here. Like, I have a finger on everything because it's just the way I am. It's how I like to run my business. And I feel like if I do go on trips or whatever to card shows, that's my vacation in a sense. Especially if I'm flying there, I try to make a trip out of it too. And, you know, go to the card show, do some business.
Right.
Outside of like having time for whatever, like I enjoy being here. Like, I don't really feel like it's work. Some days I may leave like an hour, 30 minutes, an hour early, but that's because I feel like I got what I got, what I needed to get done that day. And I have guys here that last hour of the day or whatever that can get shit done for me. Like, I don't have to do everything. And I've been trying to tell myself, like, you have employees, you have these guys for a reason, let them take the load off your shoulders. So try and get a little better at that.
Yeah. I can only imagine what that must be like, but it's great to hear that, you know, you are able to sort of parlay your business travel with a little bit of vacation time. And obviously you're very passionate about what you do. So if you love what you do, it's not necessarily work. And so I think that helps a lot too, I'm sure. Another question I had, you know, on the front of Instagram, why did you decide, I guess, to make the executive decision to stay Instagram first, and focus on the personals and the smaller breaks, instead of sort of pivoting and transitioning over to Whatnot or Fanatics Live? And I know you guys do have a presence on Fanatics Live, but it seems like Instagram is the top priority.
Yeah, so we were in 2020 one of the bigger accounts on Whatnot when they were first up and coming. So we were getting really good fees. I forget exactly, it was probably around 5 or 6%. But then the fees went up and we were doing it, and I was like, shit's not worth it because we're doing Instagram and we're killing it there. Like, why would I waste time here when I can make more money over there selling the same kind of stuff? Definitely more work on the back end, but totally worth it in my eyes. Because that time, that I feel like the only thing that I like better about Whatnot or Fanatics Live is the back end, the shipping. Like, they auto generate your labels, they print it out, you print it. The way we do it with Instagram, obviously we got to like send pictures via DM. Like, you've gone through that process with us before. We send a picture of the label, send a picture of your cards, send you the tracking, and that's really it. So like, manpower, definitely a little more on the back end to make sure everything's good. Kind of is what it is. But we were on Fanatics Live for a bit too, and it was just at a point where the fees didn't make sense, and we put a year in on there with like very little growth. And I was just kind of doing it to do it. And I was like, we're not making money here and we're not growing, so what is the point of doing this when we can focus more on Instagram? So when we ended that, we haven't been on Fanatics Live since like early February. I was like, all right, Whatnot was in my ear again, trying to get us back on there to try it out. So we tried it out. It was okay. Definitely not that great. And it wasn't something I was like, all right, we need to do this. We tried for a little bit, did all right here and there. And then the fees went up again because they promise you we're not going to pay a lot of fees for a month. And then bang, it goes up. And then you lose contact with whoever you're talking to there. Right. So that's how they do it. They just want you on there. They get you there and then hope to keep you there. And then that's it.
Got it. So it kind of happened naturally.
Yeah, it didn't really happen the way I wanted to.
Interesting. So, you know, I personally feel, and we talk about this a lot with Collectors MD, is there's a pretty big difference between ripping on a platform like Instagram as opposed to some of these, bigger platforms like Whatnot or Fanatics Live. And not bigger in a sense that Whatnot and Fanatics are bigger than Instagram. Obviously, Instagram is massive, but just in terms of the niche category of the hobby. On Instagram, and you know, maybe this is something that I personally feel because, I've been on there, or that's where I started ripping. I mean, I guess Facebook and YouTube a little bit in the beginning, yeah. But really Instagram personals, it feels kind of more intimate. I don't know. It feels more personal. It feels like you're engaging with the shop, you know, a name, a community that you've chosen to follow. The pace is a little bit slower. The interactions are a little bit more direct, and it's not built to sort of push you into buying more and more in the moment, right? Whereas on Whatnot, it's just like the experience is engineered to be nonstop. You got the timers, the flashing graphics, the relentless streams, the wheel spins. It just creates like this casino-like environment that preys on impulse, and it's less about community and just more about volume, right? And so that's why I respect, and I'm not just saying this to blow smoke, like I genuinely feel this way. I respect what you guys do and your approach. I think it's still fun, it's interactive, but it's not predatory, and it gives collectors the space to engage without sort of being manipulated by the algorithms or hype mechanics. And so this is something that one of the viewers actually asked, and I had a question that was very similar, but Paul from our weekly meetings and group text, Paul is a very active name in our community. He asked, what is Santiago Sports doing to support non-compulsive collecting within the shop? And so my first question really is like, what does not force feeding product look like in practice? And why do you feel that's important for customer trust?
I mean, people come in and want to ask, what is the best product, or what should I be ripping? What's a good entry level product to rip? What's the difference between retail and hobby? I mean, you got to be able to see where people are at within their budget and figure out something that makes sense. I mean, I definitely push people to rip things that I would rip. So why would I tell someone to rip something that I don't care about or that I wouldn't recommend? And I tell people, I'm like, there's price points that make sense and price points that don't. And I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if you want my advice, this is exactly where I would go if I'm talked to directly. But everyone in the shop is more than aware of like what's a new product, what's out, and what people are looking to do. But I feel like the number one thing is we talk to people. Like, we want to find out what it is that you want to get from us and what kind of experience you want, so we can help you have the best experience. I mean, I think that's first and foremost.
Yeah, you guys get all of the new product, but you're not like forcing it down customers' throats. Like, there have literally been times where you guys would get a new product and Casey would be like, yeah, dude, I just don't really feel like ripping that. I feel like it's kind of a ripoff, and I'll just put it to the side and whatever, it'll collect dust.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Somebody wants to rip it down the road. Yeah, and I respect that, man, because like, they're breakers who just, and everything that comes in, it's like, you know, they're putting together mixers and they're putting
like
together.
It depends what kind of spot like certain breakers are in, though. Like, a lot of these breakers you'll see have this product and only this product, and they can't do anything until they sell it. They don't have the money to move on to the next product until they move it. I'm not in that spot. I've never been in that spot.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. All right, so our next segment is called Establishing a Voice in the Hobby, and you've also become a recognizable face in the hobby. You know, like we talked about a little bit, you're always at shows, you're networking with other owners of other card shops, folks in the hobby, you know, athletes. You're always like hanging out with athletes, especially Detroit athletes, which we'll get into shortly. But even like Michael Rubin has been to the shop for, you know, various events, and you've had folks like Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. Obviously, your Rutgers got ties there, but they were there recently. And I think even the Rizzler made an appearance. But like, that consistency has made you sort of a voice that people pay attention to in the space. And so how intentional are you about, you know, sort of like showing up to these events, making appearances, networking, continuing to sort of cultivate these relationships?
I feel like I don't network as much as I used to. One, because I got to a spot where I don't need to anymore with certain companies or certain people because I got what I wanted out of it. Like, I feel like you can never really stop networking, and I certainly do, but I got the two or three most important things were getting an account with Tops and Fanatics and then Panini. That happened 2 years to the day that I opened almost with Panini, and then Tops filed like a month after. So that was super important. And that's really what I was trying to figure out. Like, where do I get wax from? And how fast am I going to get it? Those sort of things. In terms awesome. Of like, yeah, in terms of like what I do today, like I network with people I feel like we can connect and I can help them and they can help me, whether it's doing an event, posting content that I feel like would help grow us, help grow our brand or help grow their brand. That's really what I look forward to today in terms of, you know, networking and stuff. Can we do an event, you know, things like that.
Awesome. And, you know, you've obviously built a lot of relationships with athletes and industry leaders. Has that helped you grow your business?
I feel like people like to see that we interact with those people or those people interact with us. I think it's like a trust thing. People it's like that commercial that I hate seeing now. It's like Breeze Hall and Malik Nabers on that Cure auto insurance commercial. Like, I would never think they'd be on an auto insurance commercial, but here's Malik Nabers and Breeze Hall, like two of your favorite players. Could care less about the auto insurance, but those guys are on it. So people who may not be familiar with me see someone that they like affiliating with me. Bingo, there you go. Maybe I like that guy. Maybe I'll shoot him a follow.
Right. It's all about credibility in the space. And especially in an industry where trust can be a little bit fragile at times, there's a lot of bad actors and folks that are just, you know, they have bad intentions and don't want what's truly best for the end consumer. And so when you build that credibility with people that, you know, your customers might feel more comfortable with, I think that goes a long way. And so you've also built a huge following just by weaving in your Detroit sports fandom. For those of you watching who don't know, Tyler is a massive Detroit fan. Lions, Tigers, Pistons. He obviously has all of the jerseys behind him. He's always wearing a Detroit cap. But how did that become sort of part of your brand? And how have you brought so many Detroit fans into your community, even though you're based in Jersey? I think it was a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, you were on one of your single shows and you said something like, you know, we bring in so many Detroit fans, it's ridiculous. Like, people were asking about, I don't know, Barry Sanders or whoever. And you're like, damn, it's like the demand for Detroit players is just ridiculous. And, you know, I think it's a little bit ironic because you're in Jersey and I know your brother is a 49ers fan. And is your dad a Cincinnati fan? Is that?
He is. Reds fan, Reds and Bengals.
Yeah. So you guys are, you know, kind of covering a bunch of different geos. But curious, like, again, like how did that sort of come about? And how have you brought so many of these fans into your community?
I feel like it's pretty simple. It's why wouldn't you want to support or, you know, be in the same places as someone who supports and roots for the same things as you? I think that's just like a fandom, and then there's a community within that fandom and people like that. Like, you have the same interests. Why wouldn't I want to, you know, do business with you or support you or whatever? I think that kind of goes hand in hand. I think it's funny because people ask me all the time, like, oh, your store's not in Detroit? No, like, I'm from New Jersey.
I just assume, right?
Pain and misery from a young age. It's really it. I think it helps a ton because I've always thought about doing more content oriented with just literally talking about the teams. That doesn't have much to do with the hobby, but with the content I already do, it's like, man, it really is a lot of work. And I'm sure you're starting to see it, like, putting out content. Consistency is hard. Like, that is the hardest thing about putting out content. So
yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I also, similar to you, chose a team when I was a young kid. I grew up watching them, but it was because I had a cousin whose grandfather, you know, other side of the family, was from or relocated to Miami, and so or Florida, and so we grew up watching the Dolphins, and it has been nothing but misery ever since. Fortunately, I did graduate from Penn State, so they have been my sort of number one priority as it pertains to football for the last 14 years or so. Actually longer than that. I was a freshman there in 2008, so figure like 16, 17 years. But anyway, I digress. I want to segue into sort of speaking of brand. Let's talk a little bit about content creation, because I feel like that's, again, been a huge part of how you've grown. So one thing that really stands out about you and Santiago Sports is your content, which we've already sort of touched on, but I want to unpack that a little bit deeper. So you're not just selling, you're also kind of telling stories. I mean, between the Instagram lives and then the YouTube vlogs, which I think are really key. You guys post on TikTok too, right?
Yeah, everything that we post on Instagram, because they're owned by the same people, goes to Facebook, post on TikTok, YouTube, obviously long form content, and YouTube shorts.
Right, so it's syndicated across all these different platforms. And I think your personality just obviously shines through. And you've built sort of a brand within a brand, right? You've built the Tyler Santiago brand within the Santiago Sports brand. So when did you realize content creation had to be part of the business?
Well, my first vlogs or whatever, I think, are from 2020 when we first like kind of opened. I think I was doing a little bit before we even opened. I never did it to make money because I knew I wasn't going to make money from it. I make a little bit from every video, like anywhere from 50. Like, I think the most I ever made on a video is like $500, and that doesn't even cost to cover to make the fucking video. So right. It is what it is. But I do it not because I like it, not because of the money, but because of like, there's not really a residual effect from it. Like, I don't know who's going to watch these videos. I don't know who's going to see it, but it creates brand recognition. People see my face. People see my logo. People see me, and they want to make a deal with me at a show because they saw my content. They saw that I'm easy to deal with in most people's eyes. Some people who don't agree, it's up to you. But they see me make these deals, and they want to make a deal with me because I'm easy to work with, or I pay stronger on certain stuff, or they just want to meet me, or whatever the hell it is.
Right.
So I feel like that is the goal. People see me doing it and they want to recreate that and make a deal with me. And it's free advertising. Like, anywhere you can put your stuff, you should be putting it out there, because you never know who's going to see it. My best video I ever put out on YouTube, views wise, was the shop tour from this January that we opened the new shop. It's got like, I think 33 or 34,000 views. And people who live around a corner didn't even know we existed. And now they know because I put out that video. I didn't think it would go that crazy. I thought it would do well, but not that well. So that video kind of changed things a little bit too.
Yeah, you actually answered my next two questions with that answer, which is great. Which was like, you know, how has content helped you expand beyond Mattawan, New Jersey, and reach a national audience? And that's exactly it. You put out content, you put your name and likeness out there, and you attract people from all over. And we live in a day and age now where you can, you know, consume content, but also transact with a local card shop wherever you are, whether that be through Instagram, your website, other channels. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so my other question was like, do you see yourself more as a shop owner who does content, or a content creator who happens to own a shop? And I think it's really the former, right? You're a shop owner who does content. You're obviously extremely passionate, but the content is sort of layered in, right? And you do it because it helps expand the reach. But again, like, your store, your brand is really your bread and butter. That's your baby.
Yeah. I mean, I love what I do, and I eat this stuff up. Like, I collect, like, this is all my stuff behind me. I could probably open another store with all the stuff that I keep from my collection. And that's one of the things we're going to do. I'm going to put out a PC, a couple of locked up PC cases on the walls, just so I can actually show some of my stuff. Yeah. That's kind of the goal there. Like, I love this stuff, man.
That's awesome, man. Do you keep most of your PC stuff in the shop, or do you bring any of it home?
I have some home, some in the shop, like some stuff I just pick up. Like, I just have stacks in boxes full of stuff, and I don't get to show it off enough. And that's some of the content. Like, I'll do my pickup videos you know, probably like one every week, give or take, of stuff I just picked up. And I'm usually only showing the nicer stuff. But I was like, man, I pick up so much like lower end shit that people would enjoy just as much to see what I'm, what I like and what I'm after. So I kind of take a, I haven't really focused on that and I want to focus on it. I think people like to see that stuff and I definitely would like to share it. It might not get the same views or clicks or people might not find it as interesting because I'm not showing a $500 card and it's like a $20 card, but I love that shit. Like I'm pumped to get my Corey Schlesinger Fleer Tradition as I am to get a Jared Goff 101. Like I think I almost rather have this card than that. I could care less. It's because it's what I like. So I don't, yeah. I don't mind showing what I like more. And I think that's something I want to do.
Yeah, I love that you said that because one thing that we talk about a lot at Collectors MD is collecting with intention, buying what you like, not what other people like or what's hyped or what the market is telling you to like or to buy, right? You buy for your own, within your own boundaries, within your own budget, but for your, you know, joy of collecting, not just because it's a hot name or a hot product or hot item. And so I really respect and appreciate that. We have a few more segments and we'll touch on that a little bit more, shortly. But the next one is like sort of challenges and opportunities, for shops. So obviously running a shop isn't easy. Distribution is tough. Margins are thin, obviously with all the product that comes out. You know, I don't know what your margins look like, but I can imagine that it can be challenging at times. And so the temptation is always there to lean into gambling mechanics, right? And we talk about that a lot at Collectors MD. But shops like yours show there's other ways than to be on Whatnot 24/7 with all the bells and whistles. So curious, what are the biggest challenges that you face as a shop owner right now?
Challenges. I feel like I'm pretty used to everything or I'm able to adapt. I don't really have a negative outlook on life. That's the thing. I'm not really worried about stuff. Like if something happens, like the other day, my front door wouldn't open, like the lock was stuck. I was like, all right, like gonna have to call a locksmith, whatever. Like I would say in the past I may have freaked out, but I realized like 5-6 years ago, like you can't control everything. There's no reason to be like, yeah, I'll get pissed off, but I won't stress on it. I won't harp on it. It's like, all right, next, what are we going to do next? How do we fix this? How do we get through it? I think that's what changed a lot for me. And I think other shop owners can kind of see, it's like, sometimes you don't have to focus what's in front of you. You kind of have to look forward and how you're going to get past that if there is an obstacle. I don't really feel like there's anything too crazy. I mean, I'm pretty used to all of it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, owning a brick and mortar, any brick and mortar where you're the owner and everything sort of falls on your shoulders, things like the door not working or the toilet getting clogged or the lights won't turn on, like you gotta deal with the crap. And, you know, unfortunately, that's sort of just par for the course. But if you could get past that, like you said, and not let it consume you and realize that at the end of the day, this is just like regular crap that people
have. You mentioned one thing too in your segue to asking that. Yeah. So you mentioned like gambling or like whatever through cards or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people don't know this about me. They probably just think I don't gamble at all. I don't bet. I could barely tell.
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
I'll tell you what a fucking spread is. I don't do that stuff. I don't gamble. I don't play fantasy sports. The only time I'll ever bet is when I want to shut up like a Yankees fan. I'm like, all right, we're down five. We're going to come back in this game. $100 right now. Like, I like to bet to shut people up. That's really it. And they, like, piss me off. That's really, that's about it. I don't gamble. I don't do nothing. I see something I want, I'm going to buy it, or I'll get it later. I don't do any of that stuff at all. Just not for me.
I really respect that. Obviously, there are a lot of synergies between gambling and the hobby, and a lot of people that are in the hobby also gamble and vice versa. And sometimes it's subtle, but, you know, at its core, gambling and ripping packs share the same psychological mechanics. That's sort of what Collectors MD is founded upon. Both are built on chase-based outcomes with low probability of hitting big, winning big, and a much higher probability of disappointment. So that structure...
That's why we like to, like, so we do repacks, and we've done them before, but we brought them back over this past year or so. That's right. Why when we do repacks, like you talked about the odds or whatever, right, we build them to where we know exactly what, like, we'll show the chasers and we know what the floor is. So there's never going to be a ceiling without a floor. I mean, that's just how it is.
Exactly.
I would say the way that we put ours together is there's usually between a 30 and a 40%, sometimes 45, sometimes the low is going to be 30, but a 30 to 45% chance of making your money back or better, which is odds that you do not, one, don't find in wax. If you can name one product where you're going to get guaranteed at worst 30% of your value back, that just doesn't exist. And I feel like that's one thing that I like offering to where people who do want to get that, like, adrenaline rush of pulling a card. You also know how many packs are out there. So we start with 100 packs. You know your odds are pretty – if there's 30 to 45 good cards in there, where are you finding those odds in terms of getting your money back or better, or hitting a card that's 7x what you put in, or at worst getting 20% back? That's how I look at it, and that's how I like putting it out there. But, people are never going to be happy either, but you simply cannot have that floor – have that ceiling without having that floor. There can't be $700 cards in every $100 pack. It's just not how it works. So I wanted to say that. I heard you say that before.
No, I appreciate you saying that. I really respect the fact that you you don't gamble, or when you do, it's just to shut people up. I love that. I mean, that's the Jersey in you coming out. I mean, we tend to be very stubborn, and, you know, it's like if you don't mess with us, then take a hike. What I really respect is that, not for nothing, like, and I say this respectfully to other break shops and other shop owners who run the massive repacks on whatnot and such, but you're not hitting your customers over the head with like $2,000 spots in a break where there's only like 10 repacks, but there are 30 spots of, you know, 20 people who are paying upwards of $2,000 to $3,000 per spot are walking home with nothing. I mean, that's absurd to me. I mean, that's as degenerate as it gets in the hobby as it's compared to gambling. And this whole structure, it's conditioned, or it conditions the brain to chase this dopamine rush. That's something we talk about a lot, which is basically like the temporary high you feel when you rip a pack, or, you know, you spin a wheel for a team in a whatnot break. And so, again, just to sort of put a bow on that, the hobby has adopted so many things from the gambling world's playbook. And the difference is just in framing. Gambling is regulated and is labeled as such, while the hobby is marketed as fun or community, but there is no regulation and there are no guardrails. But at the end of the day, the behaviors, the risks are nearly identical. So I appreciate you acknowledging that. And also the fact that, like, you know, at the end of the day, you guys clearly care about your customers and you're not hopping on whatnot. And again, just like rinsing your customers for all they're worth. So So how do you sort of balance, that entertainment component of breaks versus the exploitation that can come with breaks, right? So, like, for instance, you know, Casey is trying to fill a break, and, you know, it's been like maybe a couple hours or a day, and, you know, it's coming down to the wire, and, like, you know, how do you sort of find that balance without being like overly pushy or like exploiting people's time or finances, right? I feel like there's a fine line there.
I think when it gets to that, like in that specific scenario where we're winding down on a break, there's six teams left. They're just not moving. We got to figure out how to get it filled and how to make it, again, you have to make it cheaper for people to get in. So we'll usually break it down and do a filler. And that's the easiest way to do it. Six teams left or 600 total, 10 spots, 60 a spot. You could get that. If there's a team in there that's 300 that's left, you have a chance to get them. So six out of the 10 people, however we break it down, are going to get in there. And I think people are more appealed to that. Like, they want that. Again, you have a 10% chance of getting a $300 team for $60. Sometimes it's how you have to do it to get these breaks filled. And sometimes there's people that will only hop in to get that team for that. They don't want to pay $300 for the team, so they're not going to take it outright. But hey, I'm in here. Now I have a chance to get that team for $60. I'll take a shot for one time at $60. So,
right.
I feel like there's I don't know, there's different ways to think about it, but
yeah. And you guys mostly run PYTs versus random teams, which I think is a little bit more, again, I'll use the word intentional, because it gives people the opportunity to mindfully pick the team that they want to purchase in a break, as opposed to just, you know, again, like scratching a lottery ticket or a scratch off where you don't know what you're getting. You know, you don't know if you're going to get the best team or the worst team, but you're paying the same buy-in as everybody else. So there's a little bit more of that like gambling component tied to that. And so we talked a lot about, you know, the shows, the events, which include, you know, things like trade nights, the content you're creating, new product drops. There's always a lot going on in the hobby at all times. Is there anything in particular that, like, you know, still really excites you or like gets you, you know, out of bed in the morning where you're like, I can't wait for that. I can't wait for this product release maybe, or like, I can't wait for the National or Fanatics Fest. Like, is there anything in particular that like still really, you know, does it for you? Cause like you've been in the hobby for a long time now.
I like going to a lot of the shows and just being in the thick of it and buying, like, or getting the content or going back to the back room to like meet these guys. Like the Detroit show's like home for me, because I have a great relationship with the showrunners and I can go and meet a lot of the athletes there and grab content with them. So it's like, I'm pumped to do this. Like, these are the guys that I love watching, excuse me. And then I get to meet them, do content with them, and introduce some of them to cards. So that's pretty cool to me, is like growing the hobby through these athletes who maybe they connect with me, they take an interest in it, and I can help them source boxes or source their own cards or people they want to collect cards.
Yeah.
And that thing that really drives me when going to shows and traveling, I think that's pretty cool. And I love it. Like, I think that's my favorite part of it at this point when going to shows.
Awesome. Any particular Detroit athletes that you know, you've maybe built a stronger relationship with that, like, you know, you would put in sort of your, I don't know, top three?
So Terrion Arnold, like, we'll DM back and forth sometimes because he wanted some of his cards. Tommy Canely, I text about cards. He doesn't, not that he really cares to talk about
former Yankee.
Former Yankee, yeah. Tommy Canely is awesome. He helped me make a connection with Kyle Finnegan, which is dope. Flamethrower. Jake Rogers followed me from the collab I did with the Tigers, the Javi Baez and Riley Green content. And these, like, the Tigers, like, most of those guys, like, know me. Like, they'll see me. Again, I'll be on field before the game. They'll come say what's up. Or even I'll be on the stands and they'll be like, yo, like, that's insane.
That's awesome, man.
That
especially DC, is such, like, a big fan.
Yeah, like that they know me, and it's pretty cool. Max Crosby is probably one of the favorite people I've ever met, because he's just like a good dude. And we met, I told him what I do, grabbed him for like quick content, and he followed, like, didn't even ask him. Like, I just tagged him in something, posted it, followed me right away. And like
that was really interesting, because cool. He's obviously a Raider.
Yeah. Well, he's from Detroit. So we talked about go. I didn't really know much about him when I first interviewed him. Like, oh, like, who would you grow up liking? Like, who's your favorite player? He was like Megatron. He goes, I grew up a Lions fan. I looked at him.
Get
like,
out of here. That's what? Awesome.
I'm like, I didn't know that. I didn't really know much about him. J-Mo, like, he's one of those guys, like, him and J-Mo, if they walk into the back room at a show, like, they'll make it a point to, like, say what's up. Like, if they're getting dragged somewhere, be like, yo, what's up, come dap me up or whatever. Like that stuff's cool to me because like you're making relationships with athletes. Like they're normal people too, which is like what I think some people don't understand. But it's definitely cooler when you're like, all right, like, you know, this guy like knows me. And I feel like some kids are like people at card shows, you know, they want to take a picture or whatever. And it's crazy to think that people want to do that with me. And I feel the same way with like people, like I'm just a regular dude, but these guys are like athletes, again, regular people. But I don't know. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome, man. JMO being Jameson Williams, I assume.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. There. I mean, I feel like a lot of these athletes are really down to earth for the most part. You know, like Jared Goff seems like just like a chip, you know, a normal blue collar guy.
he's like surfer vibes, like Cali vibes, like just goofball kind of.
He is a goofball. You know, it's funny. My wife always, anytime she sees him on TV, she's like, is that the quarterback from Hard Knocks who didn't know, which direction the sun rose or the sunset? Because there was this like infamous clip from Hard Knocks back when he was like a rookie on the Rams where he didn't know if the sun rose from the east or the west. But anyway, I digress there. That's awesome. So how do you sort of see shops staying relevant as some of these big platforms keep growing, like the Fanatics and the Whatnots?
So how do I see shops keep growing is what you're saying?
How do you see shops stay relevant?
I mean, they have to get in with Fanatics or something. I mean, that's going to have to be the main factor. A lot of people were scared about Fanatics getting in there, and like they've done some great things. They've changed some things that other shop owners don't like, but it all depends on exactly what your relationship is. People are never going to be happy. So I think that's one thing.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Stay relevant. They're going to have to figure out like to work with Fanatics or Panini. Like the landscape's going to change even more in the next 6 months with Panini losing the licenses. So that'll be interesting. And I think people really need to get thinking about how else, like, you can't just rely on wax. You got to get singles. You got to be able to sell other stuff other than wax. Like if you're relying on that, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And speaking of the licensing, you might have a little bit more insight into this than most people. Are they officially losing the license this month, like, or next month? Is NBA, that still happening?
NBA is up in, I'm pretty sure, October. It's either October or November. And then NFL is done in March or May of next year.
So, and is that something they can keep sort of kicking the can in court with litigation and stuff? Like, I know they've been able to do that successfully in the past to continue making product. I feel like they were supposed to stop making licensed NFL product several years ago, but they just continue to. Like, do you anticipate that they're just going to come out with, like, Prism basketball for, like, the Cooper Flag class? Or is that, like, a non-starter?
I think they're going to do what Topps is doing with Topps from Wemby, you know, generic jersey. That's what I think is going to happen. Like, I'm pretty sure that is what's going to happen.
There are certain players. I think we're going
to get to a point where I talked about this before. I think Panini's kicking Fanatics' ass in court, from what I've heard. Yeah. I think the government hates monopolies, and whether it's a monopolized industry or not, from the outside looking in, how does it not look like a monopoly? You know what I mean? How does anyone who's been in business or in the government or whatever look at it and go, wow, like they're taking over everything? Yeah, it kind of looks like a monopoly, but I don't think it's not from Topps or Fanatics directly. It's from the companies, from the sports. It's from the NFL, the MLB, NBA. It's from them being exclusive with Topps or Fanatics or Panini. It's mostly on them, and I think they're going to get to a point where these leagues are going to be told you need to do business with both entities. And I do think best case scenario, we get to a point where both companies are making cards, and maybe one company is more limited than the other. I think they get to a point where Panini's making maybe 10 products a year, 6, 4, 5, 6, 10 products a year, and Topps can do whatever they want. I think that's best case scenario, and that's what I would like to see to happen. I think it's good. I don't think it's really like they'll see it as competition, but I don't. I think in the end, if they care about their customers, which is what they
Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Fucking preach that you, it's good for the hobby and good for the consumers to have these options and all these products.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting too, because like Panini, when they lost their, not their MLB license, because I don't even know if they ever had an MLB license, but when they lost their MLBPA license, the Players Association, they were no longer able to make current players within their unlicensed product. And so they started to gear towards the prospects and the legends, right? But then over the last couple of years, it seems like, you know, they're bringing in more and more rookies. Some of these rookies that are becoming veterans, they're still keeping in the product. For instance, like Bobby Witt and Aaron Judge are like always in Panini product, or even like your boy Colt Keith, he's got like second year cards in like Prism Baseball. Like they kind of just, I don't know, there's like a fine line there. And then on the other side of the coin, a lot of these unlicensed cards tend to have like logo patches, right? You have like an unlicensed Pirates card where on the actual card, the player's hat is blank or his jersey's blank, but then the patch is like a giant Pirate logo. It's like, what, like such a head scratcher. And I know that there's a lot of nuances with them owning licensed for like maybe the memorabilia, which is separate from the Players Association or the league. So there's like some loophole there, but it, the whole thing is just so confusing. Right. And then like Topps making product with the current football or last year's football class, but leaving out Penix and JJ because they're Panini exclusive. But then Panini doesn't leave out Caleb, Jaden, Drake May, or Bo Nix, even though they're Topps Fanatics exclusive. The whole thing is just doesn't make sense. Yeah. But hopefully, you know, in the end, they figure it out in court and, you know, they create a solution that benefits the consumer. And hopefully in that process, you know, maybe the court can figure out how to regulate this hobby a little bit. And we won't dive too deep into that. That's something we talk about a lot. But we are coming up on our last segment here. And I appreciate you, Tyler, for taking, you know, the full hour here. You know, it really means a lot. So we'll wrap up shortly. But I do want to talk a little bit about personal perspective and philosophy. And so I used to personally rip heavy, like not just with you guys, but with other card shops. I spent a ton of money with Jaspies and Blez, and even like, you know, join breaks with Backyard on whatnot. And so I've personally pivoted into what we like to call collecting with intention. Ever since I started Collectors MD, I've scaled back on the personals and the breaks, which, you know, we call collecting with intention. It's just being more thoughtful and mindful about our purchasing decisions, not just falling into every single marketing trap or joining every single break or having to rip every single product. So I'm curious how you think about sort of the balance between sort of mindless and endless ripping as opposed to what we call intentional collecting. What keeps you motivated day to day? Or, you know, what keeps you motivated to keep doing what you're doing day to day?
I mean, I just love doing it. Like, I don't see myself doing anything else.
Yeah.
That's really it. I mean, I feel like I definitely more intentionally collect. I'll rip what I like. I don't rip just to rip. Like, I have a shelf of wax in front of me that's all stuff that I grew up with for the most part. It's like 2003 to like 2010 product. Boxes that maybe I couldn't afford back then or just used to rip or didn't rip, whatever it was. I know I'm going to open those and I'm probably not going to get anything good, but I'm going to have fun doing it. So that's how I look at it in terms of ripping. There is new stuff I'll rip, but I won't go crazy because I know it's tough to hit with wax.
Right. Right.
It's really it.
Yeah. And a lot of people just feel the need to constantly scratch that itch. And, you know, they don't realize that ripping wax or joining breaks isn't the best way to spend your money, because most of the time you're not going to make back even a decent percentage of what you originally invested. And so Collector's MD sort of serves as a security blanket or a safety net for those people that are just starting to feel the burnout, the relentless energy that comes from the hobby every single day. And unlike gambling or casinos or sports books, there are no guardrails. You can't self-exclude. You can't put yourself in a cool-off period. You can't set deposit limits. It's just there, and you can literally open up Whatnot 24/7 and access a break or buy a personal, whatever you want. And so, you touched on it a little bit, but I want to hear a little bit more of like your personal philosophy on the whole idea of collecting versus ripping, and why those two behaviors are so like inherently different.
I mean, collecting, you're essentially buying what you like or what you're interested in. Ripping, it's obviously a crapshoot, depending on what you're looking for. I mean, there's ways like to be like you, for example, like, oh, was a case hit pulled yet? Was there anything good like in the case? Whatever. Like,
yep, that I always ask those questions.
Huh?
I always would ask those questions.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know every time what's been pulled because we have multiple breakers. They're like, I don't know what's it. But there's different ways to look at it. I mean, like, there's calculated ripping and then there's just ripping to rip. I think people, it depends what you want to do. Like, if you're just into ripping or breaking, there's different ways to not just buy a personal box and get in. Like, if you're a Tigers fan, just buy the Tigers in a break instead of opening a box and looking for the Max Clark Bowman Chrome auto.
Yeah, well said, man.
To go after what I like, and I'm not picky with what I like either in terms of collecting. Like, if it's a Jared Goff card and it's cool, I'll buy it. It doesn't have to be the 101 for me to buy, or like an autograph, or it doesn't have to be him in a certain pose, or it could be in a Rams uniform. It doesn't really matter that much to me. If I like it, I like it.
Yeah, no, I respect that. One thing we talk a lot about is like setting filters for yourself as you are being more mindful and thoughtful with your purchasing decisions, because there's so many options. There's so many variations of things within the hobby that you can pick from. And so if you start to sort of distill it down, get a little bit more granular with what's out there and set limitations for yourself, like, I'm only going to collect Detroit players. And it's okay if, you know, they're in their rookie jersey. Like, for instance, Goff was a Ram when he was a rookie. So if I'm going to collect Goff, like, I'm going to have his Rams cards. That's okay. But I'm only going to focus on Detroit, athletes for the next couple months. Or I'm only going to focus on a specific sport or set. Like, those things are really, really important so that you don't end up just, like, going overboard with your spending and just buying everything that you see or everything on your watch list on eBay or every product that's coming out of your LCS or your favorite breaker on Whatnot. So those things are really, really important just in order to sort of stay on the right path and make sure that you're not falling off the wagon, because far too many people in this hobby tend to do that. And so last question here, how do you guide customers, your own customers, let's call it, toward healthy habits without killing the fun?
By telling them essentially what I just said, going after what you like and being smart about it, like buying that card or ripping. Like, I try to tell kids this all the time. Do you want a Bo Nix rookie card? All right, go buy it instead of trying to pull it. You want a downtown? Maybe instead of ripping that hobby box for $700, you're better off going to buy the card for $700. Some people are hell bent on trying to pull that card, and I respect it. Like, there's people that will only put sets together there's people that come to shop that will only put sets together out of boxes that they open. So they don't want to put a top set together, one to 700, unless they've pulled that card in a box. And again, that's maybe call again. It takes time to find that stuff. If you want to go card by card by not opening boxes, but got to start somewhere. It really depends on what you're doing, to be honest. Right.
Yeah, well said, man. All right, we're going to close this out with a rapid fire round. I'm going to ask you a few questions and just hit me with the first few words or sentence that comes to mind. You ready?
Okay.
All right, favorite card in your personal collection?
Just sentimental-wise, where is he? Fleer Maximum Corey Schlesinger, 2002 card. Nothing crazy. Just,
wow.
Just a card that I remember being one of my first cards that I really liked.
That's awesome. Like an obscure piece, but that's all about, again, yeah, collecting with intention. Like. Yeah. Favorite Detroit athlete?
You get like just in general, like just athlete in general?
Yeah.
Or by sport?
It doesn't matter. Any athlete, former, current?
I had to go Corey Schlesinger, I guess.
Wow. Okay. Favorite non-Detroit athlete?
That's tough. Non-Detroit athlete. Let's go with, I mean, Jim Thome is up there for sure.
Okay.
Always loved Jim Thome. Frank Gore, he's another guy that I've met. I'd go between those two. Frank Gore is a guy that I met that I really like.
I respect the answer. I was waiting for you to say Aaron Judge, but we'll take Frank Gore and Jim Thome. Awesome. Favorite show you've attended this year?
Detroit Sports Spectacular for sure.
Awesome. Most underrated set for new collectors?
In what sport? In general? Like, that's tough. I'll just go with baseball.
Let's call it baseball.
I personally love Topps Pristine. That is definitely a higher end one. But
Pristine. Do they still make that?
Yeah, Topps Pristine, they make it. They've been making it since 2022.
Interesting. Again, Topps Pristine.
23, 24. No, actually, it's since 23, 24, 25.
Oh, yeah. Topps Pristine. That's like
it's the pack. It's like the pack within a pack within a pack.
Yeah. I always forget about that every single year.
But for entry level, it's definitely different. I don't know. I think some of the Bowman Megas that come out, I forget which Bowman Chrome, people usually love the Megas.
Yeah. But
Bowman's usually not as popular. Bowman Blasters were solid. I'd say stuff like that because you get the best of both worlds, best of both worlds with, or three worlds, current guys, rookies, and prospects.
Right, and you get pretty much guaranteed number parallels. Not always, but it's almost like a mini hobby box, and they're relatively inexpensive. Good answer, or good answers. A card you regret letting go of?
Apparently, I had this Steph Curry Kaboom 9.5. I think it was an earlier one, 2014 or 2015. That market's gone crazy. I had it in there. I've had the card for like a year. It's in the case. I sold it like 2 months ago. Had a $4,500 sticker on. Apparently, a 9.5 just sold for like $15,000. So,
jeez.
There's that. I made good money on it, though. So,
yeah. Well, that's, I think, par for the course when it comes to collecting. You know, it's virtually impossible to keep everything, and we're all eventually going to let go of pieces that might be sentimental or might, you know, double, triple, even 10x in value down the road. You know, you can't predict the future just like anything else. So I think you just have to roll with the punches and just, you know, appreciate what you have. It's okay to let go of pieces. It's okay to miss pieces. But what's important is appreciating what you have, which I know you do, and I respect. So last question here, one piece of advice to give collectors who are just getting started in the hobby.
Best piece of advice?
Yeah.
Buy what you like, point blank. I think buying what you like and getting a taste of what it's like to rip wax too definitely helps. Like, it could be a blaster box or a pack. I think getting the taste of both worlds definitely would help.
Love it. Perfect answer. All right, Tyler, this has been awesome, man. Love what you're you're doing, what you're building with Santiago Sports, being community first, credible, authentic, all things we talked about. I truly, genuinely believe this when I say it. Shops like yours keep the hobby grounded, and that's just so important. So if any of our listeners, any of you guys want to connect with Tyler, you can check out at Santiago_sports_ on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, or you can stop by their shop. I believe the new address, and correct me if I'm wrong, is 419 Route 34 in Mattawan, New Jersey. Did I get that right, Tyler?
419 Route 34.
Awesome. And Tyler's Instagram handle is at Tyler_Santiago_. Did I get that right, too?
Yep, that is perfect.
Awesome.
You got it all down. Man.
And as always, if you or someone you know is struggling with compulsive collecting or overspending, you can join our Collectors MD peer support group meetings every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our next meeting will be this evening, September 24th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. They're free, they're confidential, and they're open to anyone. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, collect with intention, not compulsion. We'll see you next time.